Welcome to AI Boost Lithuania podcast.
Welcome to a special edition episode of AI Boost Lithuania podcast. I am its host, Kristina Belikova, and I am excited to reveal what we have prepared for you today. Technology is becoming increasingly important in our daily lives, but also on a global scale. Countries are competing for leadership in various tech fields with the mindset, you are first or you lost. But how far can you go alone? Baltic American Freedom Foundation, together with the DC-based Center for European Policy Analysis, decided that U.S.-Baltic cooperation in the field of tech has a lot of potential and needs a little boost. That's why they're launching a Digital Innovation Baltic Fellowship that will aim to develop and support a network of next-generation transatlantic leaders in the tech space. In this episode, we will be talking about this fellowship and how to build a transatlantic digital leadership. Today with us, we have two amazing guests talking to us directly from the U.S. Milda Matačiūnaitė-Boyce, Transatlantic Leadership Director at the Center for European Policy Analysis, and Michael Pold, Ambassador in Residence at the Arizona State University, former U.S. Ambassador in Estonia and Serbia and Montenegro. Ambassador Pold, thank you very much for joining the AI Boost podcast today. It is an honor having you here with us.
It's a great pleasure being with you today, and I always look forward to speaking to my friends in Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. So it's a wonderful region of the world that I feel very much attached to.
BEF programming has been in the Baltics for almost 10 years now and aimed at increasing cooperation between the United States and the Baltics in various fields. However, Digital Innovation Baltic Fellowship is the first program focused specifically on digital technologies. Why do you see it as an important field to focus on at this moment in time?
Well, look at what you all have accomplished. Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia. You all have accomplished a great deal in the area of digital technology, in the area of e-governance, which is a subject very near and dear to my heart. And while I was in Estonia and visited other parts of your part of Europe, I found that in many ways you had modernized your systems and had jumped ahead of where we are in the United States. And I think it is really, really important for us to enhance and deepen the dialogue and the joint progress together in this area, because there's a lot more the United States can do that we're still not doing when it comes to digital systems.
These days, technology often comes into picture while talking about international politics and democracy. With social networks becoming an integral part of political campaigns and a tool to influence and shape public opinion, how do we make sure that technology advances democracy instead of undermining it?
Well, you hit one of the most important elements of this conversation, because it is exactly this point that you're making now that I think has slowed down progress in this area. And I would say to some degree, rightfully so, because it is very, very important to make sure that as the technology allows so much to happen in the direction that could potentially affect the privacy of individuals, that we need to go ahead and make sure that we get this right from the beginning. Because once we walk down a path of just having technology there, walking it back and rethinking the issues of privacy and of the rights of humans is going to be much harder to achieve. So I'm eager and impatient, as I'm sure your generation is even more impatient about progress in this area, but we need to go ahead and get this right from the beginning.
Looking at the way technology works these days, do you see more opportunities or threats there?
I always want to look at the positive side first, opportunities first. And I wouldn't say threats, but I think challenges which need to be addressed as we go ahead and seize those opportunities. The opportunities for digital technology are obvious. I mean, we are already doing it right now. We are using one right now that we are having this podcast on. I have my iPhone next to me hooked up. I have my iPad next to my laptop. I have so much technology around me, and the old saying always is that whatever I have here in front of me is infinitely more than the United States used to shoot its first man to the moon.
In Europe, there is a lot of talk about ethical technology, ethical artificial intelligence, and I believe that this is important for the United States as well. How do we build a path towards an ethical tech that does good for the people?
I completely agree. I think we in the United States, together with our European friends, with all of you, we share the same concerns. Because first and foremost, in the center of our entire existence on this planet is the human being. And we need to go ahead and keep that in mind as we develop technologies which very, very quickly can reach beyond that moral center that defines human existence on this planet. So we need to be very, very careful as we develop technologies that can potentially infringe. I mean, you know, we're here talking about digital technology, but think about things such as cloning and all the ethical considerations that has brought to the foreground. And I think what's keeping us from seizing those opportunities that you mentioned just a moment ago more effectively is that we tend to go ahead and think of some of these issues in a more closed circle of national deliberation, whether it is in the United States or whether it is in individual countries of Europe or whether it's even the Europe as a collective European Union effort. This is a global consideration and not just one that you can be handled in any one country or in any one society.
What do you think is the way to do it? Is it by imposing more regulation, raising awareness and educating people, or working with corporations? How do we make sure that we are on the right track?
Well, you always begin with awareness and education and not with regulation. You need to start, first of all, educating ourselves, particularly, of course, us non-experts in this area, to make sure that all of us are understanding based on science, based on expertise, based, in other words, a lot of different people need to come, stakeholders need to come to play here, from the average citizen to the technological experts, to the ethicists, to the political leadership, to a full range of stakeholders need to get together and talk about what are the potential opportunities here, what are the potential challenges here, and how do we go ahead and build a framework that we all commit ourselves to observing in order to advance the technology while at the same time being cognizant of the important element of the rights of human beings.
The United States and the Baltics have been partners in various fields for years. Why do you think it is important for us to cooperate in the field of technology?
Because you guys are pretty far ahead. Because, I mean, let's be frank. I mean, again, my experience is more deeply in Estonia than it is in Latvia or in Lithuania, although I've had contact and friends and some awareness. But when I look at the entire digital infrastructure of Estonia, the concept of e-citizenship, the entire system of e-governance, there's so much that already exists on your side of the Atlantic that for us is still, we're still behind being burdened by a lot of legacy systems that have been established a long time ago, decades, even centuries ago, that have still not evolved enough into more modern systems. In the Baltic states, in all three of your countries, the regaining of your freedom with the collapse of the Soviet Union has afforded you the opportunity to go ahead and build new modern systems from the ground up, which has given you an edge when it comes to digital technology.
I believe we still have a lot to learn. And what, in your opinion, are the main things that the Baltics could learn from the United States?
Well, I think one of the things that maybe we can share from this side of the Atlantic is that we want to be sure that individual freedoms are, and as you can see right now in the very polarized debate we have in this country, we have a long-standing tradition of the individual being the center of societal organization. And that the collective is a collective responsibility is arrived at by free association rather than by organizational mandate. So I would argue that one of the things we can share from this side with our friends on the other side of the Atlantic is that commitment to, in the end result, each human being has her or his own individual right to determine his or her pursuit of happiness, his or her status of being within a society. That should come, in our opinion here, on the foreground, and then the collective action should be freely arrived at by these individuals. I think that's something that we can contribute to the conversation.
You served as an ambassador in Estonia, and you're well familiar with Latvia and Lithuania. Where do you think lies the biggest untapped potential of the Baltics?
Untapped potential? The challenge of both Estonia, all three, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, of course, is the overall size and the number of people that you have to dedicate to this very important subject. The brain power and education you have, and then some. It's excellent in all three of your countries. The commitment to a human advancement and to technology is also there. But there are only so many of you. And I think it is important to go ahead and the untapped potential is to make those connections between your relatively limited number of people with a larger group of people, be it in the broader European sense or in the Euro-Atlantic sense, to go ahead and bring all of us together, to go ahead and share the experiences and to work together on advancing and creating progress in this particular field. The Estonians used a term that I always liked very much, and that was the virtual state. Estonian leaders were always arguing to me that with 1.3 million people, Estonia will never have enough people. It needs to create more critical mass by creating a digital critical mass that adds to the physical critical mass that Estonia has. And I think the same holds true to some degree in Latvia and Lithuania, although those you now start getting into larger populations.
A big part of our audience is interested in artificial intelligence, so I would like to focus a little more on this technology. AI is often called a technology of the future, and global race for the leadership in this field is at high stake. China, with its lower standard for data privacy, has a competitive advantage against the US and Europe. How do we catch up, and can we even aim for leadership?
Yes, of course we can. We must be the leaders in this regard. I attended a meeting this last week where a very smart person, much smarter than I am, said, in the AI race, he said, there is no second place, that there is only leadership or being behind. So, yes, we are encumbered, and I would say happily encumbered, by concerns for privacy and the rights of the individual. I want to be encumbered by that. As a committed citizen in a democracy, as you are, I think that needs to be most important to us as we develop this technology. I do not see a contradiction between this concern for privacy and the rights of the individual and the technological advance. I think this can go hand in hand. Do authoritarian regimes have an edge on us in the sense that they don't have to deal with public opinion? Yes, they do. But when you look at the history of human development over the last multiple decades, since the end of World War II and even before that, but let's just start with the end of World War II, I don't think that democracies have done too badly in where we are today.
As you have mentioned, there are still these authoritarian regimes around the world, and as we develop new technology, there is always a risk that it could end up in evil populist hands. How do we prevent that?
We're not going to be able to prevent the technology from getting into populist, as you say, populist evil hands. The technology is going to get out there. If you recall, well, you won't recall because you're too young, but if you look back in history at the development of nuclear weapons, there was a very strong and intense effort to contain that technology for very many obvious reasons. It was unable to be contained. artificial intelligence will not be able to be contained as a technology and only be held in the hands of well-meaning Democrats. What we can do, and what I think we must do, is we must engage in a global dialogue, which will also have to include people who do not share the same values and ideals that our democratic societies do, but nevertheless, we must work toward finding an agreement that we will go ahead and deploy these technologies, at least in a global regime that commits to a certain set of standards. Just like, for instance, and I know that it's troubled right now because it's not working all that well, the WTO, the World Trade Organization, was an attempt to arrive at a common set of economic and trade rules across the globe that involved both democratic societies and autocratic societies to tie them into the same set of rules. Now, again, we're struggling with some of that right now. Things are not working as well as we had hoped to, but it does not mean that the effort wasn't the right effort, and that it's not the same kind of thing that we need to at least attempt to work on as we develop AI.
In your opinion, what are the technologies of the future that offer the biggest potential? Is it health tech, fintech, or maybe AI or something else?
Health tech is also part of artificial intelligence. If you look at the kind of systems are deployed right now in diagnosing health conditions and treating health conditions, there is so much, including artificial technology, or on the verge of being developed or already in play, that all of these things have to be included in human progress. But we have to make sure that we understand what human progress actually means. In other words, technology, in my view, must never exist for the sake of technology. It must exist in service to humanity. And that's how we should approach our technological development, our technological thinking, and also where we have to draw the limits as to how far we want to take technology, so that we keep the interest of the human being always in the center, as I said earlier, in mind as we go ahead and develop these things. But I mean, right now in the middle of the COVID pandemic, technology, including artificial intelligence on behalf of saving human lives, that is a wonderful and a critical and important way to start.
What are the most successful U.S.-Baltic business cooperation examples that we could learn from in the future?
Well, again, let's go back for a moment to my example of Estonia and the virtual state and the virtual and how a small country or a small economy can effectively draw mutual benefit with much larger economic systems. When I look at all three of the countries, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, of regaining your independence, like we were saying earlier, what is the first thing that you did? You joined every single, if you wish, quote-unquote, Western club that you could join in order for you to be tied into a larger mass, a larger group of people that could derive mutual benefit from their relationship, including the economic and the commercial and the trade one, as well as the security sector. So in that context, I think one of the things that we need to, in this intense period that we have lived through recently and we still are living through right now, of renationalizing interests of each countries, I think we're going off exactly, in my view, in the wrong direction. We should be going in the partnership and the alliance direction of working together to solve challenges of our globe. And the challenges of our globe, as this pandemic has demonstrated, as climate change has demonstrated, as global security issues, including global hunger, I mean, you name it. Is there an issue today? Whether you're sitting in Riga or in Vilnius or in Tallinn or in Washington or in Paris or in any other country right now, that you can say this is purely an issue for our country and it has no impact and no relationship to anything else happening outside our borders. I would argue to you The answer is no.
I think that a pandemic and this global health crisis demonstrated very well that countries do need to cooperate and that no country can play this game alone and win it.
And it shows not only is it counterproductive, it's deadly. In this case, it's deadly. Dealing with this issue one by one, and now we're just about to go into a much more an equally challenging but much more beneficial phase, and that is, how are we going to go ahead and distribute, at what speed and at what and how broadly, all the vaccines that have now been, it sounds like, successfully developed to go ahead and save us from this critical danger to our health. It has to be done on a global scale. Healthy Latvians and healthy Americans are not going to save save all of us on the planet from this pandemic. It's going to have to be all of us. And therefore, national policies for global challenges are just plain wrongheaded.
In these challenging times, what kind of leaders do we need at the front line of this global technology race?
Leaders who understand that the reason they are in leadership positions are to serve and not to enrich. Leadership is a service activity. You lead for a purpose. You lead for somebody. You lead for others. We talk in the activities that I'm engaged in right now, we have a concept called character-driven leadership. And character-driven leadership is defined by doing the right thing in the right way for the right reasons. We need character-driven leaders in this world who serve on behalf of the people whom they lead to provide them that benefit of their activity to enhance their lives and to make their lives better. That's the kind of leaders we need right now, and we need to fight for that every single moment of every single day. Because if you look around the world today and you identify failed societies or frozen conflict or active war, and you look for one single element that is common to all three of those situations, it is either failed, absent, or malignant leadership.
And now with this Digital Innovation Fellowship, what kind of people you're expecting to see as leaders in building this transatlantic digital cooperation path?
Right there, you put your finger right on it. We're looking for character-driven technology leaders. And here's the important part, and you and I just talked about this in these last few minutes, and that is you can have brilliant technologists, brilliant computer scientists, brilliant individuals who can visualize the incredible potential of technological process. But character in their leadership introduces again the human dimension of connecting the human being to the benefits of this technology and not to develop technology for technology's sake.
Ambassador Pold, I would like to thank you for a very insightful conversation. Thank you very much for being today with us.
It's been a great pleasure being with you. Thank you very much for having me with you today.
After such a great introduction to the topic by Ambassador Pold, now is the right time to hear more about Digital Innovation Baltic Fellowship. We will talk about it to Milda from Center for European Policy Analysis, who will tell us what this fellowship is about and what it has to offer. Hi, Milda. Thank you for joining the AI Boost podcast today. We are delighted to have you here.
Thank you, Christina. It's a pleasure to be here.
Digital Innovation Baltic Fellowship is the first program launched by SIPA that focuses on promoting digital leadership in the Baltics. How did you come up with this idea, and why do you consider this a priority these days?
So that's a terrific question to start the conversation. And thank you once again for inviting me to speak today. So I guess the idea was born when our new president, Alina Polyakova, started working at SIPA and brought this broader focus on digital agenda, focusing on digital domain rooted in democratic values and principles as a priority to Transatlantic Alliance. And then we had a conversation with Ambassador Mike Polt, a BAF board member, who expressed his interest in seeing more programs that would have more tangible outcomes beyond research scholarships with somewhat of a caveat that SIPA would maintain its mandate as a research policy institute, but perhaps seeing more of a, concrete results, something that would really impact both communities in the Baltic states and U.S. And initial inspiration for framing the project came from this fascinating response to the pandemic by the HAC, the Crisis Initiative that was launched in the Baltic states. It was a virtual hackathon that brought together a public and private sector, and particularly a startup community that came to offer these innovative, creative solutions to common challenges impacted by the pandemic. And it was fascinating to see that it grew into this global phenomenon that battled the immediate problems of the pandemic, but also offered solutions for the post-crisis world. And we also thought about expanding and bringing those innovative and creative ideas to the United States and share those lessons and provide a virtual platform for developing U.S.-Baltic partnerships and facilitate the transatlantic collaboration on digital solutions to those shared challenges in our societies. And quickly on in terms of why it's a priority, perhaps shorter term, it's given the EU ambitious agenda on digitalization and new US administration focus on innovation and joining allies to develop 5G networks and develop ethical AI and other emerging technologies, it's logical for the U.S. to partner with European allies and to work together and also counterbalance, I guess, more from the policy perspective, great power competition with China, which is currently leading in emerging tech development and research. So it's kind of a path to create this Euro-Atlantic digital infrastructure and the system. And more of a forward-looking long-term objective would be, I guess, eventually with this emergence of technology, AI will replace some of the human jobs and the future labor market will be split among people, machines, and algorithms. So we need to be prepared, increasingly adapt to this digital environment.
I must admit that it's amazing to hear that a pandemic can serve as a source of inspiration for new projects and ideas to be born. And it seems that turbulent times are the best times for innovations to emerge.
Exactly. It's somewhat of a silver lining. We've seen this fascinating solidarity and people coming together to help each other. So I do agree with that statement.
You have mentioned that you're expecting to see some concrete outcomes of this program. So what are these outcomes that you're expecting to see at the end of it?
Yes. So basically, we're aiming to develop and support a network of next generation transatlantic leaders in the digital space. At SIPA, I lead the Transatlantic Leadership Program, and one of the objectives is to develop the future generation of leaders in all sectors and connect this transatlantic community on issues that bound us together. And given this is a pilot project driven by a new initiative, the main outcome I'm anticipating is seeing, you know, of course, successful first run that would lead to a renewal of the program for another year and perhaps even years to come. And I think it's such a timely project, as we alluded to, pandemic and that we're all in the virtual environment, so might as well make the most of it. So this would only be the way to secure, you know, the sustainability of key program objectives is to continue renewing this project and continue this built relationship over the first 12 months.
For those planning to apply, could you please walk us through the design of the program? What should participants expect from it?
That's a tough question, but I will try to take a crack at it. So basically, we're currently collecting applications, and we will be reviewing them with a selection committee from each Baltic country, and we'll have the virtual interviews with the prospective candidates. And once we have the selected fellows from each Baltic country, which again, part of the program is to select one from each Baltic country. So we'll have three total fellows and we'll pair them with US counterparts based on the research topic that each fellow focuses on. So the industry, the topic, the research issue, you know, what part of, you know, emerging technology they're focusing on, for example. And then we will focus on scheduling virtual meetings between each fellow and U.S. counterpart, and also kind of inspire exchanging ideas and, of course, have them provide a venue, building a rapport and sharing feedback on each fellow's research and upcoming projects. Following the virtual meetings, we will also engage the fellows and their U.S. counterparts jointly work on the research. So they will have virtual roundtable discussions. They will do individual research remotely, and we'll be presenting those research topics and findings to receive peer review and guidance from both sides of the Atlantic, from the Baltic mentors and U.S. mentors that we've been in touch until the call was released. And then we'll also try to set up congressional briefings, perhaps with Baltic Caucus Foreign Affairs Committee staffers in U.S. in Washington, D.C. One of the exciting parts of the project is enrolling in EDX online course. It's a platform, an open source online platform for education and learning founded by Harvard and MIT. It's a home for more than 20 million learners, and it's most top-ranked universities in the world and industry leading companies. So that would be a professional development part as well. And one of the deliverables is also that we'll try to inspire the fellows to do is publish issue briefs. We will have a writing workshop with some of our experts, specifically Edward Lucas is our expert on writing and editing. So he'll help to guide them through this publication process to share their research findings and roundtable discussions. Development of recommendations and roadmaps will be one of the goals for U.S. and EU and national governments based on these fellows' research combined with lessons learned in each Baltic country. And then based on these recommendations tailored to future research questions and opportunities for the transatlantic cooperation on tangible solutions, how to make the public and private sector collaborations more efficient to maximize these societal benefits. And hopefully this would be like a follow-on jump, you know, like a starting point where we can follow up with the renewal of the program.
This sounds great. I would love to be mentored by Edward Lucas myself.
It's a little shout out to Edward.
Yeah, I hope he will listen to this podcast. I believe that a lot of people will find this opportunity very attractive, but what kind of people do you see as potential fellows? What are the main qualities or experiences that you are looking for?
So in addition to, you know, the basic requirements that each candidate can find, of course, on the call of applications that is easily searchable on the SEPA website and, of course, our social media platforms on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, such as, you know, we're looking for at least, you know, perhaps an undergraduate degree applicants with professional experience in the field of emerging digital technologies, whether it be artificial intelligence or cloud computing or 5G networks or digital security from more of a broader perspective. So also presently could be a tech industry professionals or tech policy entrepreneurs. And of course, having clear leadership potential and ability to work independently in a group, but also lead with, you know, that concept idea that they bring and the innovative spirit that they bring, try to kind of convey it to the group. Of course, excellent verbal and written communication skills, research and critical thinking skills. That's also very important. Ability to conceptualize and share insights with the group. And definitely proficiency with technology tools and applications, including Office, Zoom, and WebEx, and also be able to devote the flex, somewhat of a flex time based on agreed set of hours to the fellowship position, given that it's going to be virtual. And I know that applicants and fellows, selected fellows, have these, you know, full-time obligations, full-time jobs, and other activities going on in their daily lives. But I guess first and foremost, and kind of something that I would like to highlight is we're looking for candidates, potential fellows that would have this demonstrated commitment to transatlantic values and principles that also really relates to, you know, digital policy priorities is the ethical, you know, digital tools and technologies that we're focusing on that would, you know, respect individual data privacy and the regulations that transatlantic community hopefully will agree on one day. But I guess that's something that really is really important to us to have like this bigger mission to kind of, you know, I know it's cliche, but make the world a better place, have this bigger goal.
We all want that.
Exactly. Beyond these professional, you know, of course, professional development, individual gain and benefit for, you know, each applicant and the country that they can contribute to in this digital domain, but also kind of build a network of do-gooders in the transatlantic community.
Thank you very much, Milda. The program sounds excellent, and I am sure that you will receive loads of outstanding applications.
I hope so. I'll hold you to it.
This is all we have for you today. Thank you very much for listening. You still have time till the end of November to apply for the fellowship and become a next generation transatlantic leader in the tech space. Thank you for being with us, and we hope to see you in our next AI Boost podcast episodes.